Hi, I'm Krista Timlin, and I support KDOL Public Radio because it offers programs with a wide range of local, statewide, national, and international information and perspectives on life today. KDOL connects me to local storytellers, innovators, and experts, and KDOL provides a platform for local volunteer DJs to host shows that flood my ears with great music that I won't find on a local commercial station.
Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. In this month's style segment, I'd like to talk not about a particular beer style, but instead about a change in how individuals perceive particular beers and beer styles. It's a phenomenon referred to as the Lupulin Threshold Shift, or LTS. Back in 2005, legendary Russian River brewer Vinny Silurzow first coined the term Lupulin Threshold Shift. The term seeks to describe how a beer drinker's exposure to hoppy beers increases their tolerance of bitter flavors over time, thereby increasing the threshold of what they find too bitter to enjoy. This in turn changes their perceptions and expectations of beers they may have previously thought of as exceptional. Lupulin is the sticky yellow resin found in hop cones that contains both the acids and essential oils that are manipulated in the brewing process to infuse both bitterness and hoppiness into the finished beer. Beer drinkers afflicted with this potentially devastating condition often discover that beers they once thought of as exceptional examples of hop-driven assertiveness appear pedestrian in comparison to bigger, bolder, hoppier beers that seem more exciting. An example of the progression of Lupulin threshold shift might look something like this. A beer lover who has enjoyed a fine example of a German Hells for many years suddenly finds the beer lacking. They can now only garner the same level of satisfaction from a more hoppy Pilsner. Soon enough, their threshold has shifted again, and they are drinking pale ales. Their threshold continues to shift, and soon IPAs are required to hold their interest. The IBUs and hop-driven characteristics in their beers of choice continue to build, and they rapidly discover they have run out of options for beers that achieve a level of hop aggressiveness that piques their interest. Nearly every beer has become insipid, and their hedonistic beer style spiral is complete. The concept makes sense, particularly when parallels are drawn with spicy food. Most people do not pick up a West Coast American IPA for the first time and initially love it as the bitterness is too intense, though the aroma is often appealing. Similarly, most people cannot indulge in a Thai spicy curry as their first foray into spicy food. Essentially, these very bitter beers and very spicy foods need to be worked up to over a period of time, with consistently greater exposure producing increasing thresholds of sensitivity. While the Lupulin threshold shift has not been scientifically researched, the phenomenon of spicy food tolerance has been explored. For example, a 2012 study found that experience is the key factor for preference and tolerance of spicy food, as opposed to personality differences or physiological adaptation. It's likely the same with beer drinkers' tolerances and thresholds of hops. Experience and repeated exposure to hoppy beers leads to greater tolerance. A broader study about how humans perceive smell, Keller and Vosshall, 2004, suggests that the impact of aroma, and by extension flavor, can change over time. This change occurs via adaptation, notably by increasing concentrations over time. While not exactly the same, the parallels with the concept and consequences of Lupulin threshold shift are striking. There is also plenty of anecdotal evidence to further support the concept. Googling Lupulin threshold shift brings up a raft of posts from beer aficionados lamenting the newfound insensitivity of their palates. It could be argued that the LTS is responsible for the consumer shift from pale ales to IPAs as the most popular style over the past decade. The misery experienced by beer drinkers when the LTS renders their former brews bland and unexciting is genuine. Considering this tragic palate transformation, one question that many have posed is, can the phenomenon be reversed? Sadly, no definitive answer can be given as no academic studies have been conducted on this important question. However, there have certainly been anecdotal reports that Luplin threshold shift can be put into reverse. For example, individuals who have lived for extensive periods in parts of Europe where hoppy beers are rare report being overwhelmed by the hoppiness of American IPAs, which they had previously enjoyed prior to their sojourns away from them. Of course, reversing your own Luplin threshold shift, or avoiding it happening in the first place, does have its advantages. Beers that you once thought were extraordinary, but then shifted to pedestrian, classics like Sierra Nevada's Pale Ale or Anchor's Liberty Ale come immediately to mind, will taste extraordinary again. In the past, your new age, insensitive palate would have had to drink a double IPA to get your Luplin high. With a lower Luplin threshold, a standard American pale ale will more than suffice. Huge, roasty, tannic Russian imperial stouts can be traded in for porters. Finding subtle hop esters in lightly flavored beers like Hell's or Kolsch might become your new norm. Whereas once a lack of intensity would have reduced a beer's impact, your lower threshold might very well allow you to find subtle flavor elements that you would once have missed. Luplin threshold shift is a phenomenon that begs more investigation, not just in terms of increasing sensitivity to hop bitterness, flavor, and aroma, but also the reverse. This improved understanding might lead many beer lovers to reevaluate what constitutes a refined palate or even what makes a beer great. Coming up next, we'll have an interview with Bobby Wilkin of Hoodoo Brewing Company, located in Fairbanks, Alaska. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hey, everyone. This is Sharon Red Baron. Join me on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, for Red Baron Country on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 opposite the borough meeting.
I called up my DJ on Friday after work. I told him how you done me wrong, how much it hurt.
We've got Bobby Wilkin, the owner slash brewer at Hoodoo Brewing Company in Fairbanks, Alaska. Bobby, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Bill?
Hanging in there, my friend. So, hey, how are you guys weathering the COVID-19 up there? I see you've got your beer garden open again, right? I saw that on Facebook.
Yep, the beer garden's open. We're still restricting it. We're basically seating people as they come in. Used to be a little bit more of a kind of just free for all, but we have about 22 spots, kind of areas out in the beer garden, and we'll kind of seat your party, and then you can go grab your beer, just to kind of to limit it, because in the summertime the beer garden's nice and big, but it gets pretty crowded. So we're trying to do our part just to kind of be a little bit responsible and just limit the crowd, basically. So, but it's going pretty good. It's going pretty good. And all of our customers are adjusting pretty well to it. So,
yeah, last time I was up there, I pretty much looked like half of Fairbanks was there on the afternoon I stepped by.
Yeah, it definitely can get on the sunny days. The beer garden is a very popular place.
You're open for on-site consumption again. How did you weather the closures and everything?
We actually voluntarily closed the day before the state shut everything down. So we closed on, I think it was St. Patrick's Day. We just kind of, just because the brewery can be pretty crowded and there's a lot of people there. You know, it's a pretty big area, but there's, like you said, half of Fairbanks can be there sometimes. So we voluntarily decided to just close and a real tough decision, of course. And then the next day the governor made the decision for us. So, yeah, so we opened for, we just kind of really focused on just to-go sales and just trying to keep the beer flowing. We started to make some kind of maintenance lists, we'll paint this and we'll clean that and we'll kind of just try and keep everybody employed. We ended up right now or previous, up until March, we just canned our Kolsch and our stout into 60-ounce cans, 4-packs, and nothing else. And we haven't canned our IPA up until now. And so when this kind of all came came crashing down, we were kind of thinking of what, you know, what should we do? So we focused on growler sales and making it easy for people to pop in and grab growlers. We started redid our website, made it really easy for people to order online, pay online, and pick up at the brewery really quick. And then we got the ball rolling on canning our IPA, which is our Kolschner IPA, our two most popular beers. So the IPA has been on the wish list of people wanting it in cans. So we thought this was a great time that would kind of boost our revenue and kind of just force us to do that, which is long overdue. So anyways, we started canning our IPA, and then we canned a New England IPA the next week. And we canned our Maibock for the first time this year. We canned our Belgian Golden Strong for the first time. We're canning our Goza. We're going to can that on Friday this week, and that'll come out on Friday or Saturday. But anyway, so we've kind of transitioned to cans just to satisfy that demand, and it's just gone very well. We've had to scramble to get cans. We had to bring quite a bit out of Canada. It was the only place we could find just empty bright cans. And now we've got a pretty good supply of cans, but we're canning all the time. We just have a little canning machine, very manual. It takes about three or four people to can beer. And now we're doing that, a couple days a week. So it's going really well. And we're and now that we're open for on-site consumption, not quite at the level where we're at. We kind of have that beer flowing out too. So really we're at max capacity right now, working on a construction project that we started in February to increase our capacity about 50%. So we're getting toward the end of that. The tanks will be here in about 3 weeks, and we should be able to brew into them in first week of July. So once that happens, that'll help a lot with our kind of our restricted capacity, and we'll be able to make a little more beer and kind of ease up a little bit on our production stresses. So it was definitely a few weeks of, it was really scary, of course, like it is, was for a lot of people. And then once we kind of got the cans going, it really, really just became very chaotic, but just trying to manage the chaos and a big scramble. It really reminded me of the first few years of running the brewery. It was just really, very difficult. You're just kind of each day you're trying to figure out what to do, and you're not really sure what to do. And you're really just, it's all about the customer, and it's all about trying to, pump out great beer, quality beer, and do it right. And I hadn't really, as a business person, I hadn't really felt that way in a few years. So it was really exciting, but very stressful. But
you had to remember how it was to work really hard, huh?
Well, I always work hard, but it was, it was kind of the unknown. It was just, there was a lot of unknown. It was, and we had kind of, we hadn't really felt that in a while. So,
well, a couple of questions. So, are you planning, obviously you made this move into cans kind of out of necessity, but that's something you want to maintain going forward?
Yeah, I think, if we stopped canning our IPA, our American IPA, I think there would be some sort of an uprising, and I would need bodyguards or something like that. So if at all possible, we're not going to stop canning the IPA. And then, and other beers, I think that'll kind of, it really just, it kind of just shook up our business, kind of our business plan. And I think for the better. So I think we'll keep canning beers. Right now, our big limitation is, like I said, beer capacity or brewing capacity. And we need a bigger kind of cold storage area, because we keep, all of our beer keg canned cold all the time. It has to be cold all the time. We don't let anything come to room temperature or anything. So we need a bigger cooler to kind of store the varieties of cans in addition to the kegs we were already storing. So that's in the kind of project list right now. But yeah, I think we'll keep doing cans as much as we can.
All your cans you're selling on site there. You're not distributing them anywhere.
Yeah, or I'd say 99% we're selling on site. We, when the restaurants were allowed to sell beer to go, we did kind of a little pilot program to sell a couple cases into a few restaurants, and they're still taking a little bit. But yeah, 99% is just sold at the brewery. Sometimes we send some down to Anchorage around Barley Wine Fest. We'll send some to La Bodega, but not right now.
Yeah, so those would typically be restaurants that you had your beer on draft but can't use it because for to-go sales.
That's right, yeah. And just something, if people order a sandwich for dinner, they can also just get a can of Kolsch to go with it or something like that.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. It sounds like you're weathering the storm quite well by shifting into canning a lot of your stuff. So what's this project, the specifics of it? You said you started it in February and it's going to expand your production. What exactly are you doing?
Yeah, we're kind of the rear area of the brewery. It's about, the whole building's 4,000 square feet. So there's about 1,000 square feet in the back that was grain storage and apparel storage, cardboard, just kind of dry storage area with pallet racking going up the walls. So it was the storage area. So basically we took all the dry goods out of there. We're storing it at a warehouse close by. And then we cut up the slab, about 1,000 square feet, put in a slot drain, a trench drain, and re-poured the slab. The walls are waterproof now, metal walls, and re-insulated. We're in an old building, so anytime we tear into anything, we try and insulate it. It gets a little nippy up here sometimes. So then we're basically creating a production area, sending glycol to it so we can cool tanks. And then we're having one 60-barrel fermenter and one 60-barrel bright tank. Those will be here in a couple of weeks. So there'll be, two tanks back there now. And then in the future, if we did want to add more, we'd really just need to stand up and, order another tank, stand it up, and we could just plug it right in. So it's kind of ready for the future. And we can do... We'll kind of use that area to wash kegs. And, if we ever got a larger canning line, then that would be a great place to can beer. So kind of turned this dry storage area into a wet production area.
And when do you figure to have that one finished?
We're coating the floor with urethane on Monday. And then tanks will be here right around solstice. So I think they'll be here around the 22nd. And then we'll, hopefully by then we'll just be able to stand them up and plug them into the glycol system and electrical. And we should be able to brew in them hopefully by the end of June. That's wishful thinking, but, definitely in July. And then we'll be all done with that.
How are you guys handling the festival cancellations? You're probably going to be in Haines, huh? Or I can't remember.
You always
go to Haines, yeah.
Yeah, we always go to Haines. So we're pretty bummed about that. And we were going to take a nice contingency down there of a few staff that have always wanted to go, and we were kind of planning on this great trip, go down there, go camping, and so we're pretty bummed to miss that this year. That's a good yearly thing, but we'll get through it. That's kind of a minor bump in the road. It's kind of a bummer not to see, the brewing community in Alaska is so tight knit, and that the beer festivals are great because you get to run into them and him and her, and you get to bump into everybody every once in a while, especially being up here in Fairbanks. You get to run into people at these festivals, which is great. So definitely missing that. But,
Yeah, I would be shivvying you about coming down for the one in August here, but that's been canceled too. So,
yeah. We were definitely, this year we were going to try and, go to more festivals that we want to go to. So we were really planning to come down there in August. But, next year.
We'll get them next year.
Yep. So,
anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, Bobby? Sounds like you guys are holding it in a road up there, which is good to hear.
Yeah, we're doing good, and it's always surprising that just how our customers are. They're willing to roll with the punches, just like we are. When we close, and then when we open partially, and here's how it works. Everybody's just kind of is into it, and that's been kind of the easy part. The customers have just been so supportive and supporting their local businesses in general and their local breweries, and it's been great. But thank you, Bill.
Well, hey, thank you for taking the time out to talk to us. We really appreciate it, Bobby. Take care, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see you when we see you, whenever we can all come out of our little bunkers again and get back together in one spot.
Yeah, hopefully sooner than later. That sounds pretty good.
All righty. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Calling all KDLL listeners. Would you like to have a direct voice into what you hear on the air? KDLL is seeking members for its Community Advisory Board. The CAB meets quarterly to gather public input and evaluate how well KDLL programming meets the needs of the community. If this gets your ring of approval, contact Jenny at KDLL at info@kdll.org or 283-8433.
For our last segment this month, let's do a quick beer gear. In this month's beer gear, I'd like to point you toward a new blog from the North American Guild of Beer Writers. It's called The Reporter's Notebook. The Guild launched this new temporary project with the aim of supporting its members and finding important stories during the COVID-19 crisis. Here's what the Guild had to say about the project. The goal of this blog is to be an outlet for short, original pieces of content that highlight compelling stories that might otherwise be missed at a time of great change for the beer industry. There's nothing more important to our mission than to make sure stories are told, and as opportunities and outlets are shrinking for everyone in journalism, this is one way we're able to ensure voices, anecdotes, and the accounts of what's happening right now don't get lost or never shared at all. New articles are typically posted weekly, and the quality of writing is top-notch. I encourage you all to check out the Reporter's Notebook at www.reportersnotebook.org. Finally, this month's closing beer quote is from that great beer fantasy novel, The Drawing of the Dark, by Tim Powers. It was beer, not fire, that Prometheus stole from the gods and brought to man. That's it for this month, and until next time, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before you leap, sip before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers.